Hello and welcome to the Universe Podcast. This is episode 33 of the Universe. It's been a while for the Universe Podcast. I looked it up today. The last episode was in July, and I think for you it's been even longer.
Oh yeah, pretty much so.
So welcome back, everybody. Thanks. And today we're saying hello to Anna, who's our guest today.
Hello.
I've got my co-host Livia here with me.
Hi.
My name you know, I suppose, unless you've forgotten over the long period. I'll let you guess. All right. So, we've got Anna here. Anna got in second place at Poetry Slam, podcast. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Anna Isabella. Don't mind, forget how to spell that. Am I supposed to just say what I do?
Yeah, that's usually what people do.
Okay, well, I study English, French, and history in the teachers program. I participated in the Poetry Slam. I hope to participate in many more in the future. I have a blog, which I run, which is
fun.
Nice. What's it called?
It's called mymovablefeast.blog, not .com, because that is taken and it will lead you to some scam website. Don't do that.
What?
My Movable Feast.
Feast. Okay.
There's a Hemingway novel called A Movable Feast, which is about Paris. And I had the idea for the blog in Paris. And when I went to Shakespeare and Company,
there's a Shakespeare and Company in Paris?
Yeah, that is one.
The original one.
Oh, I think the one in Vienna.
I didn't know it was a franchise. Okay.
Yeah, I think the one in Vienna is actually probably modeled after the one in Paris.
Exactly. There's pictures of Hemingway and James Joyce in front of the one in Paris. So it's existed for a long time. Exactly. And I thought that was a fitting name and the chapeau to Hemingway.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. I mean, when I heard about it, I thought, so I didn't get the Hemingway reference, but I thought, it's a classic thing to do if you like eating and celebrating, and you like to carry that around with you, also perhaps via virtual means of transport, such as blogs, if that's a virtual means of transport. I think I've just coined a term anyway. I think that's very nice, and I'm a regular visitor of your blog. But before talking about your blog, I thought we could perhaps start where everything started.
Where everything started. All right, the Big Bang then.
So I was conceived in Salzburg.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I actually was.
Wow, your parents told you even.
Yep, that was a nice drive in the car. And they are definitely going to listen to this podcast, so that's going to be fun.
Okay, so Lee, you don't cut that bit out.
Please don't.
Okay, perhaps not where everything started, but where the relationship between the universe and Anna started. And that was last June, when the universe hosted its first ever Poetry Slam. It was hosted in a nice little cute but also slightly smoky place.
And not anymore.
Not smoky anymore. Since last Friday.
I think.
It was a future-themed Poetry Slam. And we were very happy to have you there. You came second. So how was your experience? How did you find out about it? Was it your first experience at a Poetry Slam?
Okay, so I found out about Poetry Slams through the Buch Wien, which at its Lange Nacht der Bücher, which is the opening night, they always have a Poetry Slam with the leading slammers of every German-speaking country. And the last one was yesterday, actually. And I very much recommend it. So if you want to look up the lineup from yesterday, it was great. And the winner, whose name is Jesse James LaFleur, she's absolutely incredible. But back to the topic. So I saw it on your Facebook group because you, like, we knew each other before from somewhere. I don't know, but I knew your face. And I saw you post like, oh, this is the last call. Just send us your text. And I was like, well, I have a free afternoon. Let's write something.
Oh, nice.
And that was fun. And I knew the universe because before, actually, I went to one of your like release readings, parties, but nobody knew me and I knew nobody. So it was kind of like a ghost there. Yeah.
Oh, I'm very glad then that the ghost sort of materialized. very nice. So the text you performed at the Poetry Slam was specifically written for the Poetry Slam.
Yeah.
From what they gather.
Yeah.
Okay. But it wasn't your first poem, I suppose.
It wasn't my first poem, but it was the first one that I'd ever performed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the other poems that you wrote before, do they feel different since you didn't write them for performance?
Definitely. Before I mostly did short stories and prose, mm-hmm. and I think in the poem you can hear that it is very prose heavy.
Mm-hmm. Prosy.
It's very prosy. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is, yeah, of course, you also think about, okay, what will other people accept? You know, what will they identify with? So it definitely changes because when you sit by yourself, I don't know, I feel like we all have a bit of a tendency to go into the melodramatic when we write for ourselves and sure about all of our heartaches. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very true. So would you say that writing for an intended audience potentially sometimes waters down the melodrama a little bit, or what are sort of the factors you take into consideration when writing for an audience rather than just for yourself?
I think about, well, first of all, the topic, and then maybe because it's a poetry slam, a lot of people, when they hear future, I think they're going to write about personal future. So I thought, okay, what can I write that makes me stand out? But at the same time, is a topic that everyone kind of knows about, that is important to people. And it's a bit of a... also a strategy, I think.
It's very interesting. I don't think I've ever had anybody go about writing poems strategically.
Yeah. But that's what it is. Like, you know, if you want someone to listen to you, well, first of all, if you want someone to listen to you, you're not done with writing it. Like, you have to perform it. So mm-hmm. you kind of have to think about, okay, how do I do this? Maybe read it aloud two or three times before.
That's a good idea.
Also, I think if you want other people to read it, and that's what I do with the blog too, like, you kind of have to think about, okay, what do people actually enjoy? It's not enough if I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I think though that, you know, still, while considering a potential audience and their potential preferences, there's still a large part of yourself that goes into writing still, right? It's not something that can be sort of clearly be separated from the author.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, the topic itself, I would guess, must have been important to yourself too.
Yeah. And also the goal is, just because I say, well, it's strategic mm-hmm. writing, that doesn't mean the goal is to please everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe sometimes strategic writing also is to polarize.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe strategic writing is to shock and maybe have people disagree with you. Like, for example, with my blog, like, I'm very open about feminism and leftist political ideas. So... Yeah, I that's not something everyone will agree with, but I want people to start talking about that, and I want people to start thinking about that. So, yeah, that's different from pleasing.
Yeah, definitely. It's also not how I meant it. I didn't mean that you wrote your poem to please. It's just, I feel like we all have different ways of going about writing poetry.
Yeah.
And for me, these considerations are always more of an afterthought, or maybe I am unable to include them as much. Maybe that also makes my poetry less good for sharing, because it is.
I don't know. I think I don't know your poetry, but I think someone will like what you do.
Yes.
And it's so easy to think about someone who's doing something completely differently than you and being like, that is so good. I will never get to that. Like, for example, yesterday at the Poetry Slam, I was sitting there just in awe because there were six performers, and for three of them, like every single poem, because there was two rounds, like I was sitting there being like, I could never write something like that. Mm-hmm. Never. But then you kind of have to stop and like check in with yourself and be like, you're not supposed to write exactly like that person. It's okay.
You can't.
And also, there will always be someone better than you. The question is how big the pond is that you swim in.
I fully agree. I think that's a beauty that comes with also knowing growing as a writer, but also knowing yourself as a writer, that the things you're doing are things nobody else could do, but also you couldn't do the things other people are doing. Yeah. So it's takes out a little bit this sense of comparison or competition perhaps, but then obviously in the case of our poetry slam, it does make sense that there's some strategic thinking related to that, I guess, because a poetry slam specifically calls for, it is a competition, more or less. It is a creative competition. It's not as openly competitive as our economic system, perhaps. It uses different methods. It's in a creative, safe space, and people cherish and appreciate each other, but still there's a competitive element, obviously, because there's a winner at the end. And I think that also potentially calls for strategic thinking. And would you also say that being so aware of your audience comes as a result of the fact that you have a blog and you're used to writing for people other than yourself?
Probably, but you can write a blog even if you never open your mouth in real life. And I think it kind of has to do with what kind of a person you are. And for me, it's a bit of like, and I know that that's going to make me sound really dumb, but I like attention.
That's okay.
It's good for poetry slamming. I think that's exactly. Kind of the element of it.
Yeah, but no, that's...
That came out wrong.
No, but that's fine. It's not the element of poetry
slam, but I think it is very important. You shouldn't dislike attention if you are pursuing poetry slamming.
Yeah, but that's fine. You can say that. Like, I participate in this stuff, and I hope to participate in a lot of it in the future, because a lot of things come together. I like writing, I like speaking, I like performing, and I also like, you know, the exchange with other people who have those same passions, which is super easy to do at a poetry slam. Mm. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, there was, I think at our poetry slam, there was a very, very beautiful moment. So in our second round, there was you and Nana. And so it was very, obviously, we as a society don't exactly like competitions that much. We just sort of saw the medium of a poetry slam as a means to get in new people and so on. But we don't particularly like to foster competition among people. What I found incredibly beautiful was that because both your texts were incredible, but then when Nana won, you seemed so incredibly happy for her and you were so cheerful, and I found that so very beautiful. It was this sort of shared joy rather than, you know, feeling like, oh damn, I came second and what am I even doing here? And yeah.
First of all, that was the first performance of my text. Mm-hmm. It was a good preparation, actually, for the Fridays for Future thing, which you then organized. So thank you very much. But first of all, to come second in something that you're doing for the first time in your life isn't bad. So that's the first thing where I was like, hey, like, chill. And the second thing is Nana performed before me in the second round, and I heard her text, and when she was finished, it was decided for me, because obviously I was the only person who knew my own text. Mm-hmm. And I listened to hers and I was like, I'm coming second, I know this, and she absolutely deserves it. So for me, that knowledge already sank in when I was just sitting in the audience and I hadn't even performed the second text yet.
Interesting.
Like, I just enjoyed her text and it was great, and what she did at that poetry slam was incredible, and it was definitely, specifically the second round, better than mine, and that's fine, you know, like you can admit mm-hmm. that, and that's not a reason to beat yourself up. It's a reason to say, oh, well, maybe next time I will spend more time on it, maybe use a different style. Or if it keeps happening, maybe that also means like, oh, maybe for me, a different type of creative writing mm-hmm. is better. And that's fine.
Yeah, I think that's something very mature and beautiful to deal with, situations where hopes might be high and some lots of things that are going on, and you're sort of making yourself very vulnerable in front of an audience, to then regard it primarily as a sort of an opportunity to grow from there, and as a just because I think we all tend to at least I very much do feel the need to prove myself very often. I think that still comes from the school system, you know, you have to prove you're worthy of your grade and you have to work hard for that, and people need to like what you're doing. But I think art can then exactly be the space where you ignore these prefabricated boundaries and frameworks, and you're just like, hey, that's a learning opportunity, and it's been very beautiful, and there's another person there who's done something incredibly wonderful and touching, and like, celebrate that. And that doesn't make your own contribution less valuable.
Also, it's a completely different thing from school, in the sense that in school you have a list, you know. Well, if I know the difference between the past perfect and the present perfect, then I will succeed at this exam, you know. And art and life in general, if we want to be this this wonderfully deep here, there is no list. And the hard thing, at least for me, to learn was that, because for someone else, a certain set of things worked, that doesn't mean it's going to work for you. And it's just this thing in literature. Like, Nana writes incredibly personal, very private things, but in a public way. And that may be something that I would like to explore in the future, but it is definitely not what I was doing there. It might not be the thing that I'm best at. And that's fine.
That's perfectly fine. But let's see how good you are. I read the text that it was good. So let's go on to the reading.
I'd want a bigger audience to be able to hear the text.
And they should judge that for mm-hmm. themselves.
Okay, well, I still need to find it. Oh, there it is. Okay. Future Untitled. Untitled because in 11 years, climate catastrophe will be inevitable. Untitled because how will politics cope with that? Untitled because the social system is slowly being chipped away by tiny monsters called competition and economic growth. Untitled because how will we work after that? Untitled because ever more kids populate this overpopulated earth. Untitled because I don't want a kid, but hey, who knows how much longer abortion will be legal. You make your own destiny. Ask for what you want. The universe will help you receive. Sleep is a means to an end. Sleep is overrated. I'll sleep when I'm dead. You're done with your studies soon. Quick, join the sleepless masses. What will you do once you're done with uni? Can you climb up a career ladder with that? But that's not full time, is it? Don't you want to get ahead? And do find a man. And while you're at it, have a child. A second one too, you don't want the first one to be alone, but not three. This isn't the 50s anymore. With only two, you could easily keep your career running and the house clean, can't you? Oh, I forgot to mention, do indeed get a house. Maybe with some solar panels, we all need to do our part. Who cares if they actually make up for the energy it takes to produce them? After you're done working at your fashion company for the week, donate a 20 to Greenpeace. Possessions and children, it's a new circle of life. A wheel, you once wanted to break it. But think of all the stuff you have now, and your children too. Sure, they can't go outside anymore without SPF 80, but they can see nature on TV with their stuffed animals by their sides. Imagine that, animals. You wouldn't let your kids go outside were those still around. And trees too, they could fall off them and rip their new pants. And please spare us the news about people dying of thirst or freezing to death in most of the world. So unpleasant when you're having dinner with the family. We'll deal with them when we have time and money and space. Not now, while we're occupied with the little ones. After all, we have obligations to our kids first, don't we?
Thank you very
much. Thank you.
That was
nice.
Well, thank you.
As always, I think there is a marked difference in texts that are written for. I don't know. There's nothing I can fix it upon. Like, no, I don't know, stylistic elements where I can say this is a text that's written for a public performance. But I do feel like you can immediately grasp if a text is written for a poetry slam. And I really felt that with yours. So, and it's then the second level, I think, is it's always really interesting to see the way you would read it yourself, because I also, at home, I read it out loud, and now to see how you performed it, which choices that you made. I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think it's a very powerful piece. I think it touches upon so many issues that ideally everyone would deal with. Lots of egocentrism, a lot of individualism that also the economic system propagates. I'm not sure whether that's a correct use of the word alienation in the Marxist sense, correct me, Leo, but a sense of alienation also from nature and from being so distant from the things that are actually quite basic to your being and it's also an alienation from your work in that you go to a fashion company and then to compensate for it, you just, you know, donate a little bit of money and that will make up for it. So a lot of questions around how can you go through the world with a good conscience in an economic system that often forces you to make unethical choices or that makes it easier for you to make unethical choices.
Yeah, I don't think we're necessarily always forced to make unethical choices. I guess we are to some extent because, for example, living without fast fashion is a privilege. Like, you have to be able to afford that. But which essentially means that you are pitting one group of poor people against an even poorer group of people. but before we get super, super dark, when I read that the topic was supposed to be future, that's kind of like what I thought about, because Future is not like, okay, the 5 years after college, what do you want to do? But future is like, how will I die? And the answer is not pleasant if you are part of our generation. Or at least I hope that I'm completely irrationally pessimistic here and I will be proven wrong. And I really hope so.
Let's see about that. I feel like there's three levels to the text. The first would be the where you kind of state the these untitled, these outlooks upon the future. We kind of state your personal outlook on the future. Then you have the quote section and the section where somebody's telling you to please do this and this. And then at the end you have also kind of a time progression, but where the speaker becomes the person themselves, I feel.
Yeah.
Who has kind of settled
with
this world they live in.
Yeah.
What would you say, what does that tell us about our society? Or how I would like to know how you wrote that.
I think that's,
what were your thoughts writing that?
I think that's the danger that we could all fall into. And I think it's also an expression of something that I think we all do, because we all sometimes, to say it with the words of Dumbledore, do what is easy and not what is right. This is just so many ways of doing what is easy instead of what is right that it is apparent to everyone who hears it. But I mean, if I could just choose what everyone takes away from this, one of the things would be that none of us will ever reach this like perfection when it comes to, I guess, nonviolence and ecology, which are becoming synonyms more and more. I think that's one of the most important things.
Would you say that this position, though, because it's a way of, it also sounds a bit as if the author, you know, had resigned slightly, being, at the same time, there's this very powerful message, don't fall into this trap, you know, that's, it's wrong, but then it's also very easy to fall into this trap. So what would be your position on that? Do you think there are ways to not fall into the trap, or will we most likely all end up there because the systematic structures are just so strong?
I think not all of us, and I think we shouldn't forget that when we talk negatively about a system, a structure, or society in general that is us. So saying I'm forced to do this by society, well, sometimes you may be, but not doing it might not just be your own sometimes tragic choice, but it might change the society that you are a part of. We always hear that it might still be possible to save the Earth. At the same time, of course, I could now say, well, and Fridays for Future and all of these things, they're so great and they are showing that really our consciousness is shifting. I would like to believe that, and that would probably uplift your podcast a lot more. But at the same time, I do believe that time is running out so fast that maybe being optimistic is not necessarily the route to go here. Yeah,
I think that's a very interesting question. I think that's being debated a lot also in scientific circles, how to go about, should you communicate the climate crisis to people in the words of, you know, if we really come together now and change, make huge structural changes, we can prevent the worst from happening? Or should you rather sort of hop on a train of this is going to be a disaster and scare people such that they get, you know, they become panicked and start acting. I think it's very difficult because there's so many emotions involved, and I'm not sure panic can lead to the ideal outcome.
No, it will lead to space travel. It can never and should never be the solution. But true. I believe that even if you do think that there are negative things on the horizon, it's just not only about self-preservation. Like, there are other people in this too. And if you give up and you give up trying, maybe because of all of your privileges, you might be okay. But that means that a bunch of other people suffer because you didn't choose to do anything. So, yeah, I mean, the poem places this in a very personal context, but I don't think it is personal ever.
I would also strongly argue that your actions and your choices are very political, like your very day actions, which doesn't mean that I believe in things such as consumer sovereignty entirely. Like, if you buy the organic apple, then the whole big supermarket chain will only provide organic apples.
apples.
We stopped with apples?
We were talking about... Is it working? Okay, we were talking about apples, right?
Apples in the supermarket and ethical consumption under capitalism.
Yeah.
Should we maybe tell people? The batteries ran out.
Yeah. We should tell them.
Exchanged
that.
The batteries. Yeah. Sorry. So
we're back now.
Back on track. We had sorry a nice for that. Break. But so I mean, we shouldn't get too much probably into economic theory and all that.
That's something for a different podcast.
Yeah,
probably.
For a different podcast. Liu, you seem to have plans there.
I do, actually.
Keep us updated. I know. Something that I'd be really curious about is your stance on writing and political activism. Would you say that that writing can be one of the means of, especially since we shortly talked about the fact that you also read out this text at a Fridays for Future protest. Perhaps you could also share your experience there a little bit.
Oh, okay. So really quick, that was... I don't know, a lot bigger than the poetry slam. And I knew absolutely nobody. They kind of, I think they like mixed up the lineup, and there was a different Anna, common mistake, constantly happens, who was supposed to like say something. So they like put her in my time slot. Because they just read Anna and they like supposed that it was the Anna that they knew. And so I was just standing there like super confused, like already like very adrenaline filled. Like, this is my time now. And then like a different Anna gets called and I'm like, what happened? But, so the timing, didn't go as planned. But apart from that, it was absolutely great. And, it was received extremely positively and people interacted with it so much. And yeah, and it was so nice to then talk to people about that. But to come back to your question, to me at least, writing doesn't exist in a vacuum. But I very much respect it if people want their writing to not touch on anything political. I think it's just important to realize that you're, even if you write just about personal stuff, and the personal is political, even if you write, exactly, but that's the thing, the personal is political, like your reality is shaped by the society that you live in, and you can choose to write completely for yourself, but if you lived in a different society, you would probably write differently.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I guess there's little to add to this. This was a very sort of comprehensive answer to the interaction between the individual, the writing individual in a, embedded in a social and political system, and how there's interaction. Sometimes I'm just wondering, you know, so can writing be an actual means of resistance? Can it be a tool for us also in this climate crisis to work towards some sort of change or transformation?
Yeah, sure. But if we make it just that, then that is only a fraction of what art in general can do. And I think there is a lot of positive to the whole l'art pour l'art. Why not? You know, like it doesn't have to be political. I like that, but.
Yeah. So you wouldn't say then that art has the obligation to be political in times like these or all the time? Actually, I think there's hardly been any time in history when there wasn't anything to criticize or to work towards change. Would you say art does have a responsibility, or artists and writers specifically should feel responsible?
I think people in general should feel responsible. And if you want to use the kind of art that you do on the side, whether that be writing or painting or singing, whatever it may be, if you want to use that for that purpose, then please do so. I think it's great. But also if you want to say, oh, for me, art is an escape. And I don't think that ignoring political things is ever a solution, but, you know, there's a million different ways in which you can help a cause that you believe in, and it doesn't have to be writing.
As long as you're doing something.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I don't think there's an excuse for not doing anything.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
being like, I know it's a voting Sunday, but it's raining. Mm. I don't want to go outside. Mm. Like, yeah, there's never an excuse for that, but... Yeah.
To be apolitical is political. It's a political choice not to be political.
Very true.
I wanted to know a bit more about how writing and reading and performing the poem made you feel. Because I've been thinking a lot about climate grief, stuff like that. That is very prevalent among, I know, our age group, and maybe even more younger kids. Did it make you feel angry, or how did the other people feel at Fridays for Future? Because you said you talked to them. What did it evoke in them?
I think they liked it because it was a break from all of the just theoretical stuff. And I do think that writing can provide a link to feeling that pure analysis cannot. So, yeah, and that's actually where we got the first laughs for the entire protest, because, of course it's not necessarily a funny poem, but there's like things in it that are sarcastic and that are, you know, so I think writing, first of all, provides a link to feeling that creative writing provides a link to feeling that other things can't. For me, when I write stuff, whether that be these kinds of texts or for the blog or anything like that, I feel like that's more the time where I put the feeling, and sometimes the anger, but sometimes the happiness or the sadness, when I give all of that a structure. It's not the time where I feel the strongest, but it is the time where I put words to everything that has been going on, mm-hmm. inside or outside or whatever.
I'm wondering, does putting words to it make you feel differently afterwards?
I think it sometimes gives me the tools that I need in oral discussions, because if you like, writing does help in that regard. on the other hand, like it's usually more the reactions that then by other people that then might provoke some different feeling or some change of thought. So, yeah, there's like quite often I get, apparently people don't use the comment section in blogs, but they tend to use the private messaging section, which, you know, is like, I have nothing against that, but there is a lot of positive feedback and then there's some critical feedback, which I think is so necessary to every point of view. It may change some things, or it may make me, even if I don't change my, if it doesn't change my opinion, I might just stand there and be like, okay, well, I still see it that way, but I get why people would see it differently. What does make me feel angry is when there's like arrogance that like comes with it. For example, I mean, I can say this here because I know that he won't listen to this, but there was a guy who, when I lived in Canada, I think I saw him like 3 times in my whole life. He was very aggressive physically. And I don't mean in a fighting way. I mean in a like touchy-feely kind of way. Who now gave me the feedback on one of my blog posts. Anna, I thoroughly enjoy your work. However, your last paragraph needs rephrasing for clarity. You know, that kind of stuff I do get very angry at, mm-hmm. Yes.
Understandably so.
Because it's like, you've done enough damage. Like, I thought you were out of my life. Like, you came close to me without any type of consent. And now you feel like you can judge what I do. Which also, because it is a very feminist blog, mm-hmm. That then adds another element to it. But then, like, you can't publicly be like, who the fuck do you think you are? Like, mm-hmm. You can't do that. So my comment was just, okay, smiley face. Because, mm-hmm. You know, you're, like, trying to take the high route. But at the same time, of course, like, yeah, that kind of stuff really bothers me. Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting because now we're getting more like into the feminist arena and I think that's just so much politics to your life that we could open up so many boxes. But talking about feminism and also linking it back to the universe and what the universe does, I recently learned you hold meetings where you discuss feminist literature.
Yeah, I quote unquote have a feminist book club, Anglophone feminist book club. You are very welcome if you, even if your first language is not English, but you should be able to have a conversation in English. That's kind of the idea, and read books in English. So it's called Cliterature. I would like to add that in this case, this is not a female-only space. I specifically didn't want it to be a one-gender exclusive space, but all genders are welcome. The only prerequisite is that you do have some sort of feminist values. So until now, it is about 10 women. We are now reading our first book by a man, Michael Kimmel's Angry White Men, which I very much recommend to anyone. But yeah, so if anyone wants to join us, I would be super happy. The book club is called Cliterature. My name is Anna Isabel on Facebook as well. So if anyone has any questions. And it's a way of combining the literature, the non-vacuum existing literature, with a social aspect and just general
love for a lot of writers. Yeah.
That sounds so cool.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Leo, how about we join?
The book club?
Yeah.
I don't think I have time in my life for one more thing. It really sounds tempting, but I really do.
You're a busy man.
I mean, we all are very, very busy. Yeah. So are you.
Yeah. Busy
bees. Busy
bees. But sounds very good. Sounds very nice. I'm glad there's the opportunity out there for people to join and to specifically discuss feminist literature, and that everyone's welcome. I think that's very essential too.
Would you like to tell us a bit more about your blog?
About my blog? That would be very interesting. Yeah.
Okay, so I started it as a mixture of politics and traveling, and then I found out I love to travel, but writing about it is really, really boring. At least to me. Okay. Like, other people do great job at that, but I don't. Or at least I don't enjoy it. I don't know. So it is about a lot about current, social and political events, often in Austria, but also a lot in Europe or in North America. I don't feel comfortable writing about a lot of other parts of the world yet, because those are the only two regions that I lived in and that I feel like I can actually say something about. But at the same time, I do try to be as intersectional as possible. And for example, I wrote about this idea of pitting the poor people in Europe against poor people in the world, and that other parts of the world suffer a lot more. One of the main themes of the blog is also feminism. I try to not be too Europe or white centric. Which is also one of the reasons for the book club and one of the reasons for a lot of other things, because I think this dialogue is so, so, so important. And, there might be something else coming. So I was thinking about maybe asking two or three of my friends. They don't know that yet, so let's see if they want to.
This is a shout out to Anna's friends.
But asking two or three of my friends to actually write an article. Like friends who have very, very different experiences because of ethnicity or religion or wherever they grew up or, I don't know, social class or something like that. So I'd love to start that in the future.
Very nice. Very nice. I mean, it sounds like a colorful collection, mix of a travel diary combined with political thought and very thoughtful project as a whole. That seems to be very inclusive, and I think there's a point to writing only about these things you have some relation to. It's always difficult to, and potentially also questionable from a European privileged perspective, to write about situations in the global south we can't really assess, we haven't really experienced ourselves, but obviously these need to find some space as well, but then probably other people are more qualified to write about these things.
That's actually one of the big questions that I ask myself in my writing, and also I think that is that society asks writers now, is in how far can you tell the story of someone with a completely different identity. And I think that they're, at least for me, the answer, I completely understand when people say, look, you cannot write about a culture that you haven't experienced, or you cannot write about an identity that you haven't experienced. I understand the argument, but I do disagree. Because as humans, we are blessed with empathy. And with empathy, I don't mean feeling sad for someone else. With empathy, I mean the literal sense of the word, that you can try to feel what another person is feeling. And
I think that throughout literary history, there have been a lot of people who have been insanely gifted at that. But yeah, that goes for fiction. But then for things like my blog, which is not necessarily fiction, but more political writing, or like feminism, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. but then for that kind of stuff, yeah, you can't stand there and speak for everyone. It's not possible. And then on the other hand, I also, like, what kind of like ties in with that is that female writers are often asked to speak for women as a whole. And we just don't. Like, you speak for yourself, maybe for your social group, maybe even, yeah. But this is a privilege that I think, again, where we can say writing does not exist in a vacuum. Often male writers, white writers, straight writers get the privilege of being seen as individuals. Their writing is individual. And very popular female writers then get characterized as the voice for women or the voice for African American women. And such a thing does not exist. Can you imagine an interview where someone asks a male writer, oh, so you write in your book that men don't want more than two kids. So, as a voice for men, why is that? Like, nobody would ever do that.
That's a very fair totally. Point. Yeah, and good observation for sure. I think we need to be... It's essential to always remain critical with regards to generalizations and picking out one person as a representative for a group they might not even identify with or represent at all. And also that this tends to happen more with certain groups within society than with others. And then there are those groups on the edge of society who don't get any voice at all. And I'd fully agree. And I also think that there's a major difference between fiction and non-fiction writing. Though even within fiction, I've heard some discussions which I found quite interesting. So is a white privileged man allowed to speak for a African girl, is that person allowed to write from the perspective of African girl living in traditional surroundings? Would that create an image that is just not accurate, that is just not what is actually found there? Would that also be a way of making politics? And I think there's a very fine line between, yeah, we do have empathy, but how far does that empathy reach? And I think there's no clear answer to that. No, yes or no, I think it's...
Totally. But I blurry. Think that's the beautiful thing for writing. If you write about someone, you don't speak for them. You are telling a story, especially in fiction. You are telling a story. And saying you're not allowed to do that is always problematic because a community of free expression does not say you are not allowed to write about different identities. You are, but this community of free expression doesn't save you from other people saying, oh, this is unrealistic. I don't like this. Or I don't think this is a good piece of literature. I just don't like your fiction. That's fine. You know, like you then also do have to put up with that. But I think that's the main thing about fiction. You are not speaking for someone. You can, if that's what you want to, if you want to mix it with political writing and there's mixed types of texts and all of that stuff. But if we are talking about pure fiction, you are not speaking for someone. You are telling a story. You might do a very bad job, or you might, if you really do your research well and you have ties to that community or whatever, you might do a really good job. the problem lies in only people of privilege writing about people without privilege. Mm-hmm. They're allowed to do that, but people who actually are part of those communities, they have to get the chance to do that, don't they? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely see where you're coming from. It's a much more sort of structural issue rather than an individual writer perhaps taking on or making the choice to write about something specific. The question probably lies more in the aggregate or in the sum if there's only white people writing about indigenous communities and then the misrepresentation builds up so that at some point the image or idea of that community is just so far away from
exactly
what actually is found there. Mm.
And then if you want to write about that as a white writer, I think that then it is your job if someone says, oh, we're doing, for example, a panel on this topic, that it is then your job to be like, yeah, but I do want most of the speakers on this panel to actually be indigenous themselves. Or, yeah, but then like the questions for me are not, how do you live in this society? But the question for me is, oh, how can you relate to this as an outsider? Yeah, so but that's the big difference between literary work and author, and the two of them have to be separated to some point. But the current discussion about this is about the Nobel Prize for Hanke, which is exactly this discussion. But it is exactly this discussion. It is a prize for literature. You can say, look, this is a prize for literature. Anything else he does doesn't matter. You can also say, this is a prize for literature, but it also has some political and societal significance, so I would prefer it if it went to someone else. Or you can say, look, this is a prize for literature, great, but I'm now, and this is the stance that I'm taking, I'm saying this is a prize for literature. I don't agree with his political views, but this is a prize for literature. Okay, but I'm not gonna necessarily buy his books now because I feel like, oh, I now have to support him financially. Not at all. So this is kind of like the middle thing where I'm like, I don't necessarily feel comfortable supporting that financially, but on the other hand, I see where it's coming from. It's about literature. It's tough.
Very, very big questions, very challenging. And I think there's, lots of different opinions in that to be reached. I think what it all boils down to is that there's responsibility, there's different choices to be made, there's ideally there would be an openness for criticism in whatever you're doing and whatever you're attempting as a writer, and that it's unclear where to draw the boundaries, that things seem to be, so as you beautifully said, writing doesn't exist in a vacuum, so there's writing is political to some degree. The question is how political. Is it, can it be viewed independent of politics? Does it always influence politics? How strong is the interaction? Probably that's different also with each piece of writing. But with your piece of writing, it's very political. And I think that's the reason why we did a trip through capitalism to the climate crisis to feminism and back to the Nobel Prize. And I think it's been a journey. It's been very enjoyable, though.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Us too, I think. So did we.
This was episode 33 of the Universe podcast. If you enjoyed it and would like to hear more of us, make sure to subscribe to the Universe podcast wherever you're listening to it. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review and tell us what you think to help other people find the podcast. And tell all your friends about it. Comments? Questions? You can reach us on Twitter. We're @PodUniverse. on Facebook, on Instagram, where we are uni.verse_creativewriting, or via our email address podcast@universe.univ.org. This podcast was edited and hosted by Leonhard Engelmeier. The co-host was Livia Regen. Our guest on this episode was Anna Esterbauer. I hope you visit this planet of the universe again. In the meantime, stay safe in space. Thanks for listening.